speak in the atmosphere and we say, let there be light. I have loved this series, and you know, the last Sunday of a series, there's always something special about it. I don't know what it is, but it's kind of, you know, you would think it'd be the first Sunday of a series to be the best, but I find it's nearly the last, because all the things I meant to tell you during the month, I remember to put it into it. So today will be no exception. We've been talking about this phrase, thoughts are things. We know that words are things. And I'm glad that Will talked about that last week. And you could talk about words every Sunday and it would be applicable, because our whole universe is built on words. Everything's spoken into existence. Everything's held together by words. But also thoughts are things. It's not just the things you say that are creating your reality. It really is the things that you think. And our the full title of this is Transforming Your Life by the Power of Your Mind. And I didn't even feel it was necessary to make it sound too Christian to say the power of your renewed mind. It's just your mind. It's the way you think. Let me tell you, there's a lot of Christians that do not have renewed minds. So just because somebody's read the Bible does not mean they're thinking in a new way, or that they're even open to the Spirit or whatever. Frankly, on the contrary. And that's kind of what I want to talk about today. I couldn't do a series about the mind without at least referring to Romans 12:2, which is the, you know, it's the catch-all scripture that you use for thinking. Be not conformed to this world, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I want to show it to you from two or three different translations, because specifically, I think there's a word here that you need to see to really understand what's being said here. Let me show you. First of all, this is out of the Amplified Bible. Romans 12:2, it says, do not be conformed to this world or to this age. Let me just say that a lot of times when, like, the King James Version uses the word world, it's wrong. It's not translated right. The right word is era or age. Like Jesus really never talked about the end of the world. All of this scary paranoia, conspiracy theory stuff that people have read into the Bible really doesn't exist. When Jesus talked about the end of something, he talked about the end of the age. He was saying the end of Moses, the age of Moses' law is coming to an end. When I'm with you under the end of the eon or of the age. It's really important to understand that, because even the scriptures that got translated about hell, even if you're going to believe in a literal hell, they never talk about eternal punishment. Even if you think he's talking about punishment, he says it's for an eon. You'll be thrown into the fire for an eon. The whole idea of eternal punishment and damnation is not, certainly Jesus never talked about it. It's not supported from the Bible. It's something that the Roman Catholic Church invented in the medieval times to control people. And then the Protestants just adopted it, and it became a part of, you know, the way that we think. But that was never, ever God's intention. I don't have time to argue with you about it. I'm just telling you I'm right about this. I know it sounds crazy because you've got to be sure Hitler's in hell, but that's not the way it works. Okay? So when he says, do not be conformed to this world, you know, I don't know if any of you were raised Pentecostal or fundamentalist like I was, but we always heard world, if you were worldly, that meant you went to movies and picture shows and the women wore makeup. That's our idea of worldly. What he's talking about is, don't be stuck in the way people think now. Don't be conformed to the thoughts of this age. I wrote about this in one of my books. This is amazing to me that the guy who was the head of the patent office at the turn of the last century, like 1900, he actually tried to close down the patent office because he said, there's nothing more that can be invented. Everything that can be invented has been invented. There's no reason for us to even have a patent office. This is before the airplane, before radio, before television, before computers. I mean, you think about the things that have just been invented in the last 10 years. Every time a new cell phone comes out and they show a commercial of it, you're like, seriously, they can do that now? I mean, I keep finding on my i7, there's all kind of things that it does. I didn't even know it. I'll test it. Like one day I was walking, and I said, play Christmas music. And it wasn't even my iTunes. It just started playing Christmas music. And I'm like, not that one, play this one. And it did it. Like, meet George Jetson. But you think, wow, there's a guy. This is the guy. You would think the guy, the head of the patent office would be the visionary. You know, he's the guy that's always waiting for the next new thing. He's saying there's no more new thing. So clearly there was a way that people thought that was wrong. And Paul is saying here, don't be stuck in an age. Don't be stuck in antiquated thinking. Like if I were ever to start a church, I would call it something like Church in the Now. Because I love that idea of, well, yeah, that's, you know, we have heard it said, but God is saying. Let me finish this. He says, do not be conformed to this age or fashioned after and adapted to its external superficial customs. In other words, there was a time, not even that long ago in this country, that women couldn't vote. There was a certain mindset, and there are some people, there are men today that think women still shouldn't vote. They should not be conformed to that age because it's antiquated thinking. You know, one of the things I posted about that I was grateful for this month was marriage equality. I said, you know, I've heard a lot about making America great again, but let me tell you, to some of us, America got a lot better than it was a few years ago. Believe me, when I go into the doctor and they can say, who is Ken Marshall? And that insurance, oh, that's my husband. And no alarms go off. They go, okay, thank you. And I'm like, ooh, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Jesus. Because what I had before was, I'll tell you in private what that was called. So for me, that America is better. And I posted a thing. I said, you know, there's some people that thought it was the end of the world. It was the end of marriage. It was the end of procreation. No, it's not. Gay people aren't against marriage or against straight marriage. Not at all. Marriage should be between a man and a woman. If they're heterosexual, absolutely, it should be. And all the closeted men I know that are married to women would be better off if, oh, I didn't mean to say that. I've just met a lot of them lately, and I'm like, how long y'all going to play this game? Really? Okay. I want to say, do not be conformed to that age that thinks there's some aberration about this. It's not a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's just a thing that's real. It's just a part of the world. It's a part of nature. It's a part of, you know, it's a part of the animal kingdom. It just is. So stop thinking that it's something that it's not. It's not an aberration. It's not a demon. It's not whatever. It's just a thing. And I believe there will come a generation that will not think certain things that some people still think. Y'all still with me? About a lot of things. There was Mad TV did a thing a few years ago I thought was really funny. It was two couples. One was a Caucasian couple. One was a African-American couple. And so they go to one of these like Johnny Rockets kind of places that has a 50s motif. And the whole deal is about, you know, we're reliving the 50s, and the black couple are like, well, you know, actually, we kind of have a different view of the 50s. And it was, of course, they were pushing the envelope, but like the white couple was treated quite differently than the black couple. And, you know, the white couple's like, boy, this is great. The 50s was so great. And the black people are like, not so much, you know, not really. You know, these times are better. They could get better, but they're better than they were. And so that's what this is about. It's not a world system. It's that he's saying, don't think like he's saying, don't be, just because everybody right now is thinking this doesn't mean that's the truth. And thank God for this kind of idea, because if there wasn't somebody encouraging somebody to not be conformed to the age, there would never have been a Martin Luther King. There would never be a Gandhi. There'd never be somebody who was thinking, well, I know everybody says this is the way it is, but why does it always, why? Why does it have to be that way? Why can't we change it? Let me show you, it says, but be transformed and changed by the entire renewal of your mind by its new ideals and its new attitude, so that you may prove for yourselves what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God, even the thing which is good and acceptable and perfect in His sight for you. Now, this is interesting. I've taught this for years, and I never really saw it so much until this week. You can't manifest the perfect will of God with old thinking. He's saying just the opposite. He's saying if you want to manifest the will of God, you've got to think the new way. That's why even nothing, I mean, clearly, I think I've proven in 45 years of ministry, I love the Bible, I know the Bible. I mean, I don't even need to give you that disclaimer. But there's an energy when somebody says something like, we need to get back to the Bible. It does something to my spirit when I hear somebody say, when they speak of it retrograde like that, we need to get back to the Bible. What you're trying to say is you're trying to bring back thinking that you could support, or biases or prejudices you could support from the Logos word, that even those writers, if they were alive today, would say, well, no, that was then. That's not the way, that's not now. Even, you know, when on the Mount of Transfiguration, when Moses and Elijah appeared with Jesus, Moses didn't have the Ten Commandments with him. He wasn't Moses from Mount Sinai. He was Moses in the now. Even Moses had moved on from the Ten Commandments. And that's why I've learned to trust my spirit. When somebody says something about the Bible and it kind of creeps me out inside, I think, no, I don't accept that. I love the Bible, but I don't like the energy of what you're saying. Because your implication is, let's tell women to shut up. Let's tell women who are being beaten up by men, they can't get out of the marriage because what the Bible says. I just recently reconnected. I've given you this. I've told you this story for years. I just this past week reconnected with this girl I went to high school with, who was a friend of mine, who told me years ago, it made such an impression on me that she married the guy who was like this is at Bible school. He's the up and coming. He's the guy that spoke at chapel once a year, and he was going to be a missionary, and the guy that all the girls that wanted to marry a preacher, they wanted to marry. So she married him. He proposed. They got married. On their wedding night, he pulls out a gun, and he says, I just want to tell you, the Bible says you're supposed to be in submission to me, and if you ever disobey me, I will kill you. And it started a cycle of domestic abuse. And she went to one of the counselors, who was one of my professors, and said, I'm being threatened by, I know you all love him, but behind closed doors, he's threatening me and my life is in danger. And my professor actually said, you have to stay married to him. It would be better that he killed you and you went to heaven than for you to divorce him and you go to hell. Now, let me tell you something. If Jesus Christ were standing right here in human form next to me, I would say, that's wrong. That's wrong. And I don't care what thing you take out of context to tell women that they can have guns pulled on them by men because you want to get back to the Bible. No, I am not conformed to that kind of thinking. I am transformed by a new attitude that is able to read the Bible in context and not throw it away. I don't want to throw the Bible away. Even at Metron, I still have people who will say to me, you don't even have to refer to the Bible anymore because we're going to hear anything you say. I'm like, no, I'm never going to not do that. That's my point of reference. I want the Bible to make sense. If I thought that I had spent my entire life promoting something that was nonsense, that would be I can't imagine how depressing that would be. I want to believe that I am building on the platform now that I built all those other years in ministry and taking it to the next level. I will never not refer to the scriptures. I mean, that's the way I think. Even if I hear some new age guy talking, I already think, oh, that's like 1 Thessalonians. So my mind is always moving toward connecting the dots. Oh, you're saying laws of attraction, but really that's faith. I mean, I understand how that works. And you're talking about power of words. Yeah, Jesus said, you know, like, that's why I can talk about quantum physics and not throw the Bible away. Because to me, it's all moving us toward the truth. It's like when Doug was here, the Spirit of God will lead us into all the truth that there is. Let me show you what it says in the concordant literal version. It says, and not be configured to this eon. And an eon could be anything from 3 days to a millennium. So it says, do not be stuck in a mindset that may be antiquated, may be passe. And listen, this is not just in your theology, but don't you have to rethink relationships all the time? Or like even when you watch your kids grow up, you there's certain things you want to do that you still want to parent them, and there comes a time where you think, oh, you know what, they're an adult and I'm going to be here for them, but if this is the choice they're going to make, then I'm not in that eon anymore. There was a time where I could say, as long as you're under my roof, you're going to do well. They're not under my roof now, so I'm like, all right, well then I'm going to have to be transformed, because that's the way I needed to think when you were five, but I don't think that way now. And if you make mistakes and get in your own stuff, I mean, I'm going to love you unconditionally, but it's not on me. And I'll tell you something else. I love you and I pray for you, but I'm not going to lay awake every night and worry about you, because I'm thinking, well, you're an adult, and I've brought you up in the way that I knew was right. But now I'm not conformed to this eon. I mean, I don't, it's that was then, this is now. Well, even sometimes an ex-husband, ex-wife, an ex-relationship, they want to push your buttons in certain ways, and you have to realize, well, you know, that we may have had that conversation before, but we don't have that conversation now because I'm married to this one and you're married to that one, and I'm not talking about my, I'm just saying in general. Like, we're in a different reality now, so I'll tell you what time to pick up the kids or whatever, but you ain't my husband now, so, you know, you can't talk to me that way. And there's a continual updating of, oh, I thought that way then, but now that's passé. I've got to think this way now. I remember even just a few years ago, took my kids to my parents to Las Vegas. I wanted to take them somewhere. And I said, where have you never been that you wanted to go? And that's where my mom went. I wasn't sure your dad wanted to go. That's where she wanted to go. So we took them. And it's the first time, and this was years back, but it's the first time I remember telling them what to do. You know, like they didn't know, like I was having to say, you got to do this. And it was a little bit of an epiphany for me, because I remember going on trips when we did what they said. And then I realized, oh, this is, I'm in charge now. All right, y'all sit down right there and let me check into this hotel, and don't move out of my sight. You know, it's like, and wow, things have really changed. And so you're constantly, I think I've made my point, you're constantly updating your thinking. All right, but wait, go back, Michelle, please. But be transformed by the renewing of your mind, for you to be testing what is, not was, what is the will of God, good and well-pleasing and perfect. You have heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for tooth, but I say if you hate your brother, you're a murderer. That was, that's not what is. The will of God is, so that, and I say this in all reverence, not even with fear and trembling, I say this in reverence, the Bible does not contain the full will of God. It doesn't. And even the Bible writers, that's what they're trying to tell you. They're saying, yes, it can, there are signposts, it can move you in the right direction, but the will of God is what God is saying now. And that's all through the scriptures. Even back in Genesis, remember, like, you know, if you take it literally, Adam and Eve were not carnivorous. Well, then after the flood, for some reason, God says, all right, now you can kill and eat. Why? Well, I don't know. I'm just saying things changed all the time. Even in the book of Acts, you know, don't call unclean what I've called clean. And you're like, well, you did call that unclean. Well, I called it then, but I'm not calling it now. And one more, and this is, I know Jonathan Mitchell, New Testament is wordy, but bear with me. I actually took some out, so because I didn't want to overwhelm you. It says, and stop constantly conforming yourselves to, or so then quit being repeatedly modeled by or fashioned for or patterned together with this age, this time, or not to constantly remodel yourself for this age, but on the contrary, be progressively transformed, transfigured, changed in form and semblance by the renewing, or in the renewal, for the making back up new again of your mind, or the mind of the intellect, pertaining to the faculties of perceiving and understanding of the mindset, disposition, inner orientation, and worldview, into the situation and condition for you to be habitual. It's not over with yet. To be habitually examining in order to be testing, and after scrutiny, I love that word, distinguishing and approving what is God's will, design, purpose, resolve, intent, the good and well-pleasing, even perfect or finished, complete and destined, or that is virtuous, satisfying, and able to succeed in its purpose. So, again, it's a lot of verbiage there, but what he's saying is, look at what people of old said that God said. That's fine. Use it for some context. But trust your own spirit. Let me tell you, maybe this comes with age, time, maturity, whatever, but the thing I am most grateful for in my life is that I can look at you with no, I don't even have to prepare you for this statement, but I can look at you and say, trust your heart. Not read the Bible, trust your heart. I'm not telling you not to read the Bible. I'm saying, read the Bible, but at the end of the day, trust your heart. I was taught, if your heart says one thing and the text says something else, you always go with the text. Now I believe just the opposite. I think, fine, know what the text says. That's when somebody says, well, God says so. Well, no, Moses said that. Paul said that, whatever. And that's fine. I love Moses. I love Paul. But I also want to know, what is God saying to me? I will be aware of what they said. Now I will get still in my own heart and I'll find out what is the will of God. And let me rock your world a little more. What is the will of God for me? I'm not even saying this is the right thing for you. You follow your own conscience. If you think if that's a problem for you, then you can't take on my moral compass. I mean, I can support that from the scriptures. John says, if our heart condemns us, we don't have confidence. If our heart condemns us not, then we have confidence before God. And the people who live under a condemnation consciousness don't understand the free people. They don't understand that. I mean, I'm telling you, there are churches less than 2 miles from here that would be scandalized to see women sitting here without hats on their heads, because they are under an old, or that men, or some of you guys have hats on. Like, that would be just such a, that would be such a paradigm shift for them. Because in their minds, men uncover their heads, women cover. It's like a whole, when Judah and Jonah were growing up, we had such hat issues. Because once they got a hat on their head, it was not coming off. It just wasn't. And so we'd go to places. I mean, we'd go in restaurants and they say, you have to take your hats off. And we'd have to go to another restaurant because they were not going to take those hats off. They're kind of that bad now. And even when we lived in Covington, the older gay couple that lived next door that were, you know, I never told this out loud, but what severed our relationship is they invited us to Christmas dinner and my boys wouldn't take their hats off at the table. And, you know, their mom kind of didn't see the point either, and I lost that battle, and he kind of never spoke to us again. Because in his, you don't, an old gay man from the South, in his mind, you just might as well peed on his table. I mean, that's the way he looked at it. And I, you know, it was one of those days where I just said, well, I can't, I'm going to ruin Christmas I'm just going to have to, they're just going to wear it. And we never went over there again. Because in his mind, we disrespected his table. Now my boys are old enough to say, like, I know you think it's ridiculous, but in his house, you know, and you say, why didn't you say more? Well, it's easy to say, but when it's Christmas Day and you're like, you know what, let's just let it go and hope for the best. And the best didn't happen. I'm just saying, to some people, that would be life and death. Even now, sometimes I'll go, you know, I walk in a place, I'll go, do I have to take my hat off? Because for me, sometimes having to take my hat off is a deal breaker, you know. We were walking down Peachtree the other day. I said, they had the doors open at Methodist Church and the organ was playing. I said, I'd love to go in there, but I know I'm going to have to take my hat off, and that hat ain't coming off, showing what's going on up under here today. You heard me? It's like, sorry, can't do it. All right. Before I finish this up, let me talk about something that it's a little bit of a different idea, but I don't want this series to pass talking about thoughts or things without talking about this. You know how I mentioned this a lot in my teaching about how when you get around certain people, especially depending on how emotionally vulnerable you are to them, there's nearly a contest of whose thought field are you going to walk in? Are you going to be who they think you are, or are they going to be who you think they are? Let me give you an example. Jesus walking on water, feeding multitudes, raising the dead, goes into his hometown, can't do anything. It's like the perception of the people just sucked the power right out of him. And it's because once he was emotionally vulnerable to them, and once he got into their, what do you call it, mental field, or it kind of is like a vortex. It's like once you get into their way of thinking, there's going to be a struggle. You're either going to push against it or you're going to collapse into it. And it's amazing to me that Jesus, you don't read it any other place, but in his hometown, there's just a way they saw him and you got pulled into it. And I see it happen to me all the time. Let me give you this example again, just because I think it's so interesting. My dad used to always accuse me of losing his stuff. You know, if I borrowed something, I'd lose it and not return it. And even when I went away to college, we've joked about it for years. Anything he couldn't find, he would say, "Jim Earl's taking it off to college." So even years after I was an adult, if he couldn't find something, I said, "Well, clearly I took it off to college. I mean, I've been out of college for 30 years, but it must be me." But it's funny because he thinks of me that way, and when I'm around him, I end up losing stuff. So when they first moved in their house, one day he had all these bales of pine straw out there, and I noticed it had been there a couple of visits. So I said, "Dad, who's putting your pine straw out?" And he said, "I don't know, I'll get to it." I said, "Well, you don't need to be out. We'll do it. Ken and I'll spread it out." "Okay, fine." So he hands me his pocket knife. And so I'm cutting the twine. And it was, gosh, 60 bales at least, maybe 100. So it's a lot of pine straw. And we're all over the thing. And all of a sudden I was like, "Oh, crap. Where is the knife?" Now, you think this is funny, but this is a long-held stronghold between Reverend Sweetly and me. And I said, "Ken, please don't say anything. Somehow I've dropped my dad's knife. You don't understand. I have to find this. I mean, I may not ever come back over here again if I don't find this knife." So we're could not find it. So I went over and I said, "Dad," I said, that knife that you had, "Did you really like that knife?" He said, "Oh, your Uncle Harry gave me that when I were," and I could tell it was like very prized. I was like, "Oh." And I don't remember, did I ever tell him? Somehow I was like, "Dear sweet baby Jesus, I ain't going to ask you for anything else for the rest of my life. If you could help me find this knife, I would really appreciate it. And somehow we found it. But I, what was interesting is, do you understand what I'm saying? I don't lose. I mean, I'm not saying I can't lose stuff, but I'm not disrespectful to other people's stuff. I'm not. But something about being in his field, it's like I collapsed into this is how you see me, and I'm becoming this. Like, don't hand me anything else. I'm going to lose it. Because this is what you think. And, you know, we can joke about it now, but I've had these conversations. Like, for instance, my dad hates when you're in a restaurant and somebody comes over and sweeps close to the table. He hates that because it stirs up dust. Well, I don't like it either. But I've hardly ever eaten with my parents that it didn't happen. And so I've said, Dad, I know you don't think you're making this happen because you hate it so much. You're actually attracting yourself, because I eat in restaurants all the time and nobody ever sweeps by our table. But for some reason, every time we eat with y'all, and like on that trip to Las Vegas, not only did they sweep by the table, but I remember us getting up from the table and walking over to the humongous buffet, and the guy is following my dad. So I like followed him. And swept all around the thing. And I said, I know you don't think you're making this happen, but this is you. This is you. Now, I keep having these teachable moments in my life. Like, remember I told you, was it last Christmas we went to New York? And we always have great trips. We just have one. Our mojo is like amazing. The thing I'm used to hearing is, we never do this, but we're going to make an exception. I mean, that's the world we live in. Well, this trip was just spiraling downward. Like, we missed the flight. I didn't get my money back. He took us to the wrong hotel. What is going on? This isn't the way we don't have the vacations from hell. So finally I said, you know what? Let me get out. I'm just walk to the hotel because I know where it is. So we get to the hotel. You know when you're wanting them to just go and check you in and they just keep working on that computer? Yeah. You know, I'm like, I need you to get that finger out your mouth and tell me where my room is. And she says, I'm sorry, I just can't find you. I'm like, don't tell me that. She said, are you sure you're at the right one? Because there's several of these in Manhattan. I said, ma'am, I've stayed here before. This is the place. And it literally was like two realities pushing against each other. Do you know what I mean? It's like I'm about to be pulled into this really horrible trip. You say, well, it's just a trip. No, let me tell you, plane crashes happen on really horrible trips. Do you know what I mean? Like, once Pandora's box is opened, it's not just losing a reservation, it's spirals downward. And, you know, she's looking, I'm like, come on, lady. And I could nearly feel myself pulling her into my reality. Like, no, you don't understand. We have magical tricks. She calls somebody over. Can you help me find this? What had happened was, the way the computer had spelled my name, it said like Jim's Willie instead of Jim Swilly. So she was looking under W's. And all of a sudden, it was like Andorra came in and the guy goes, yes, Stevens, we will give you the account. You know, she said, oh, here it is. And she said, you know what? We're going to give you a free upgrade with a Times Square view, which I didn't even ask for because it cost so much more. And I said, there we are. But I knew, again, Groundhog Day was on yesterday. I ended up watching it again. I'm so interested in the whole idea of multiverses and parallel realities, that there's all these possible scenarios that could work out. And once we... What are you laughing at? I'm not exaggerating. Is that the way? Once we got it back into our world, the whole trip was, again, like we were supposed to catch a flight later in the day, and I said, you know, we got time to see a matinee. I want to see Jennifer Hudson in Color Purple. So I said, we got time. We'll go have lunch. It's a spaghetti place that I love. We go there. It looks like Mardi Gras in there. It's so crowded. And I said, you know what? Let's put our name in. And they said, maybe in an hour we can seat you in the bar. Like, don't even ask for a table. And once I knew we were back in my reality, I'm like, it's fine. We walked over, didn't even have time to order anything. The guy comes up and goes, party of two for Jim? And I mean, honestly, I wasn't even sure I was the Jim. It happened so quick. I was just like, uh-huh. Take us upstairs. Best table I've ever had at the place. We're in the window, whatever. I'm like, there's. Whew. Now, let me explain to you what happened this week. And I wasn't going to say anything about this because I don't want to get this guy in trouble if under the possibility that somebody could be watching this. I didn't say his name. If he does get in trouble and you get fired from the Fox, I'll hire you. I'll do so because I don't believe it's going to be a problem, because I want to tell you this because it's the little things that teach us stuff. But for years, I've always wanted to, anytime we'd be somewhere and I'd see like an Atlanta, like a Christmas ornament with something with Atlanta on it, I would always say, you know, I'd like to do an Atlanta themed tree. That would be really cool because I love the city and I live in the city and I have a beautiful view of the city. I mean, in a lot of ways, nothing against Ken or anybody that I love, but in a lot of ways, Atlanta's the great love of my life. I really love this city. I was born here. I live two blocks from where I was born. I just love it. I love the memories of it. Some of us were talking about things we remember about it from the past. I mean, I love all of that. I've been all over the world. I love other places, but this is home. I can't imagine not living here. And the fact that I have a ministry now in Atlanta proper is like that. It's like the greatest thing to me. I just love it. And so a couple of years ago, we took the tour of the Fox Theater. Of course, I knew more than the Fox guy. He was saying stuff, and I said, can I just tell you something? Maybe you didn't know. I was adding stuff. I should just work there because I knew more about it than he did. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to sound superior. I just the stuff I know about. And if I don't know about it, I'll tell you, I don't know anything about that. You talk about NASCAR, I'm like, I got nothing. But Atlanta history, I got you. So they had this beautiful, I don't think it's blown glass, but it's kind of those kind of glass ornaments that are, they're kind of vintage looking, and they're beautiful, and they're not cheap. And I remember saying to Ken, I said, you know what? It's a lot of hassle, but I want to get an Atlanta tree. So this year, I thought, I'm doing it. I want to get a real tree. It's a hassle. We don't have kids to wake up on Christmas morning, but I want to smell a Fraser fir. Life's going by really fast. I don't know. I want to do that. So I started this project of acquiring Atlanta iconic ornaments, and it's a little bit of a project. I mean, you got to kind of know some stuff. You got to look for some stuff. You got to know where to go, whatever. But the main one I wanted was that one from the Fox Theater. Well, have you ever tried just a simple thing that just seems like there's just no way to do it? First of all, they've discontinued it. I walk over there because when you drive to the Fox, you got to find a parking place. You got to pay for parking. You got to deal with the homeless guy that's always there that tries to make you think that he works at the parking, and you know that he doesn't, but then you're going to get into a thing and you don't want to tick him off because he's going to break your window. So there's this whole thing that goes on. It's not, you say, well, let's just go over to the Fox. No, you have to think about it because, you know, here's the guy that's going to, you know, he's not just going to ask me for money. He's going to harass me. So you got to know how to live in the city. And so I get there, and there's just no way. They're like, we can't help you, whatever. And so I went back. And I said, look, let me explain something to you. I just want to walk in and buy this ornament. I know there's at least one in the counter there. And the guy said, I can't go in there. I said, I don't think you understand. I said, I've been coming to the Fox since before you were born. I did my 50th birthday party at the Egyptian Ballroom. Let me tell you, we spent some money here. I'll stand here and watch the thing. Could you just walk around the corner and get me the ornament and I'll buy it from you? No, can't do it. Call this number. I call the number. They're like, no, the only way you could possibly get it is you have to go to an event. I said, you're telling me I've got to buy a ticket to a show just to go buy the... You know, there's that point where you're like, I'm getting the ornament. Do you understand me? Like, I've put so much time into this thing. As God is my witness, I'm getting this ornament. You heard me? So... You know, lots of phone calls and calling people and going on eBay and trying to find if somebody's got a discontinued one to sell. Can't find it. So finally I said, all right, fine. Mannheim Steamroller is going to be there Saturday. I don't really want to go, but that's kind of a Christmassy thing. So I'll buy nosebleed tickets. So I don't have to pay a bunch because I'm only buying them. You know, fine. I'll show you. I'll buy a ticket to your show to get the ornament. You're not going to tell me I can't get an ornament from my tree because it's going to kill the whole thing if I don't get the... That was the whole reason I wanted to have the tree in the first place. So then, was it Wednesday, he calls me. He says, all right, look, you don't have to buy a ticket. If you'll come on Friday, I'll meet you and you can I'll sell you the ornament. Okay, fine. What time? Tells me time. Go over there. Again, avoiding the, there's the parking lot. There's the homeless guy's getting up. He's ready. He's about to do his thing. I'm like, dude, I know you. We've already interacted on many occasions. And there's a whole thing, you know, I hate this extortion, but I end up giving money sometimes to guys because I don't want them to vandalize my car. I'm like, man, I'm going to watch your car for you. I'm like, fine. Because I know what it's like to tick them off, and you come back and like, great, my window's broken, awesome. So there's a whole thing. Well, I get there. There's a little couple. Thank you. He's not there. Oh, I forgot to tell you. So I don't want to go to the parking lot, so I go down to find a parking meter. Won't take my card, won't take cash. Go to three different spots. It will not work. Finally, I thought, fine. If I get a ticket, I am getting this ornament. Walk all the way up there. He's not there. I thought, well, maybe I'll wait. This couple's taking forever to buy tickets. They just went on and on. They were trying to buy five tickets, and one of them was for the grandmother, and she's in a wheelchair. They're trying to find what's accessible. And, you know, it went on for, I probably stood there 15 minutes. And they're like, what about on the first floor? And she's like, well, how many steps? I don't know how many steps. It's like that kind of thing. And I thought, yeah. I'm going to drive down the street. I'm going to get some coffee. Because this is ridiculous. I've put this much time in trying to get stupid ornament. I mean, this is like four trips I've made there. And I'm saying it because it's not, at this point, it's not about the ornament. It's about you're trying to tell me that's your reality. And that's not, I've already visualized something. And you're telling me I can't have my vision. And that I'm being pulled into your reality. And I'm not. I'm going to bend the universe toward my will in this, and I'm getting this thing. It's not hurting anybody else. I want it. I'm going to pay for it. I just want to be able to get it. So I go. I actually posted about it. So I'm sitting in Starbucks, you know, waiting for someone to call me. Well, as I'm writing it, he calls. Where are you? I said, well, I came there. You weren't there. I don't know if the couple found their tickets, but they hadn't found. And he said, well, come back. All right, so I go there. Same girl's at the counter. Please tell me he did not leave again. I won't say his name. Is so-and-so here? And she goes, he'll meet you at the door for the office. Fine. I get my debit card out, whatever. He walks out, got a Fox bag, Fox tissue paper. It's all nice. Hands it to me. I said, awesome. Thank you. I said, how much is it? He says, no charge. And I'm thinking probably $75, maybe $100. Usually around, I've seen some that were like $150, but it's in that range. I said, "Are you sure?" I said, "I don't want to get you in trouble." He said, "It's fine." I said, "Well, at least let me tip you." I gave him a 20. And it was amazing because just all of a sudden, because I had even had some words with him. I said, "You know, you're just being difficult." I said, "If I was on the other side of that, I would help you out. I would say, watch the window. I'm going to walk to the counter. I'm going to open the counter and bring the thing and sell it to you." And I don't believe he did anything illegal. I think what happened is it's probably been discontinued. They don't know how to sell it. It doesn't scan or whatever. I don't care about all that. I was willing to pay for it. What I'm saying is, about the third trip up there, it would have been easy to say, "This is, as my mom used to say, too much sugar for a nickel." You know, it's like, this is too much trouble. I'm putting too much energy in this. But I really did want that. Boom, there it was. And when I got home later that day, like all the other ornaments I had ordered all came, like all these things that weren't supposed to be there till next week sometime, all came in early. And it was just really cool. So you can say, "Well, it's just a Christmas tree." No, no, no. To me, when I woke up this morning and I looked at it, I was like, "Oh, well, yeah, that's cool, isn't it?" I said, if I visualize something, I can manifest it. Even if people tell me it can't happen. Y'all are so funny. But do you see why I'm looking out at Atlanta? I wanted it. I just wanted it. That's just something that brings me a lot of pleasure. And what is it in Proverbs? It says, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when the desire comes, it is a tree of life." And I'm saying, you say, "Well, that's just about an ornament." No, no, no. It's a principle. The principle is there are always people that are going to, like, they're pushing against you with their thoughts. And sometimes you can't push back. Jesus wasn't able to push back his homies. He wasn't. Because they even said to him, "Is not this Joseph the carpenter's son? And do we not have his sisters here with us?" So just with those words, suddenly, you know what Jesus became? Joseph the carpenter's son. That's why, at this point in my life, I don't care. Some of you call me by my name. Some of you call me Bishop. I swear to you, it makes no difference to me. I do believe it might make a difference with how you perceive me. Because I'm just going to tell you something. When you're in the emergency room, and you might not want Jim to come. And if you're fine with that, fine. Jim can come, and I'll make you laugh, whatever. But you might need Bishop. And it's not, believe me, I've lost friends over this. I have people that don't speak to me now because they think I'm on a power trip. No, it's not a power trip. It's there are four people on this planet that call me Dad, and I have a different relation. I love you, but I'm probably going to act quicker if they call me, because when they say, "Dad, help," that's a no-brainer. Because them calling me that demands something from me that I will give because they call for that. There's two little girls that call me Poppy. Nobody else calls me that. But I guarantee you, if one of those little girls said, "Poppy, I need this," whatever, Poppy's going to figure out a way to make that happen. That's going to happen. I can't promise you I'm going to feel that dramatically about everybody else. Some people I might say, "It's not really a good time." If Sophia called me and said, "Poppy, I need you to," I'd be like, "What time?" I would break an appointment. I would do what, because that's, but it's because they call me that. When I hear those little voices, "Hey, Poppy," then that's a total, "I love you," that's a totally different thing. And they can have what, I have every intention of being that, the grandfather that parents hate. One night recently I had him, Christina went to work somewhere and I was taking care of him, and we walked the dog down to the Starbucks there, and I said, because they love those cake pops, I said, "You want some cake pops?" And they're like, "Yeah." I bought him Olivia's eating, she's, "We're not supposed to have sugar tonight." I'm like, "Well, you just had some." you ain't got to tell your mama everything that just happened. This is just between us. You enjoy that cake pop, doll baby. Poppy's here. And I wasn't there in the middle of the night if she was sick, but that's really not my problem, is it? Let me try to connect these dots, because I'm talking kind of about two different things, but not really. Because the first things we're talking about is don't be conformed to this age. Then the second thing I'm talking about is, you know, the conflict of thoughts. Well, the age is always trying to make you think a certain way. I believe in living in the now, but I also do visualize a world that thinks differently. So I kind of live in two places. I'm aware that racism and misogyny and homophobia and xenophobia, I'm aware that those things exist. I don't deny them. But I also live in a world that I'm visualizing, like Kim Clement, who went to the other side this week, used to say, I'm somewhere in the future, I look much better than I look right now. That's the way I feel like. I'm aware of the now. I love the now. I embrace the now. But I'm also, my thoughts are things, and they're pushing into the future. Just even in the last few days, I had somebody that has a successful ministry who is gay, who is not really out, not really closeted, but not really out. Pretty much his followers have no idea. And we were discussing it, and he actually said to me, he said, you know, you opened the way for us. He said, you showed so many of us how it's done. And he said, we watch you all the time to see, well, what's going to happen next? You know, like, what, you know, he said, you're a hero to a lot of people. You don't even realize it. And that's one reason I live my life so openly. Do you know, if we went to get a Christmas tree yesterday, yeah, I'm taking pictures of that. I want to say, nobody's going to shame me into saying, don't live your life. I never do anything inappropriate. If you'll notice, there's never anything on my Facebook page that would embarrass my children. Nothing at all. But for me, not like when somebody says, well, you're okay until you're talking about all that gay stuff. I'm like, no, I'm talking about my life. And I want to say, this is my husband that I'm married. And I'm not trying to rub anything in anybody's face. I'm saying there is a thought process that wants to shut that down. There's a thought process that says we don't want to believe that exists. And I'm not gonna let anybody do that. You're not gonna tell me my life is less than yours. You're not gonna tell me that I have a different Christianity or that my marriage is not real marriage or that and there's thoughts all. I mean, even something as simple. Ken has no victim mentality at all. But he was looking at Facebook last night, and he said, you know, I don't want to think this is the situation, but you know, his dad's been in the hospital this week, and he sat up with him all night, and he said, I have friends of the family that will write on my brother's page, I'm so sorry about your dad, and they won't write anything on my page. And he said, I don't want to think it's because of that, but I know how they think. And I said, well, I don't want to encourage it, but that probably is what they I mean, I know I've got people close to me that will like on everything on my page but a picture of us. And I'm like, okay, you've made your point in 7 years. I mean, I get it. You disapprove. You know what the pushback is? Lots of pictures of my beautiful life. And I love that people are actually saying, wow, you have a beautiful life. I'm like, damn straight, baby. I sure do. And here it is. And here it is from this angle. And here's it for this. And you know what? I'm going to go down on the street. And I'm going to take a picture of Ken up in the window. Like, oh, yeah, that's good. Here's my life. And here's my life. And here's my life. And here's my life. And it's just blessed. And I loved what you sang about being blessed today. But yes, baby, I'm blessed when I come in. I'm blessed when I go out. out. I'm blessing the city. I'm blessing the country. I'm blessing the basket. I'm blessing the store. I'm blessing New York. I'm blessing Atlanta. I'm blessing Decatur. I'm blessing Lithonia. I got everything I need. I got beans and greens, potatoes, tomatoes. I got all of it. And nobody's thoughts are going to say, you shouldn't live out loud like that because some people don't want to see that. Well, then some people need to look the other way because I'm going to celebrate my life. And not just about us, but about everything. Like when I'm with my kids, I'm like, look, I know y'all don't like taking the pictures, but I'm taking the pictures and I'm posting them. So you might as well. I'm buying you dinner tonight. I took them all out last. I'm picking up this check. We're going to get some pictures. My little granddaughters have learned now, like, girls, the sooner you smile pretty, the sooner Poppy leaves you alone. So they've learned now, like, come, let's get a picture. And they're like, they know, because I ain't quitting. Because I'll be like, nope, that's not it. That's not it. Yep, there we are. There's happy life. And there are people in your family, people from your past. The accuser of the brethren is not some devil somewhere. It's crazy thoughts that you have that say that you're not good enough or you're not smart enough or you're this or you're that. Even what you said about the way that you perceived yourself and looked at the picture. First of all, and I'm not just saying this, you look fabulous. But I also know what it's like to, I mean, because I don't think it's vain. I'm just conscious of image. I know what it's like to look at a picture and think, man, is that really, is that what I look like? And I don't mind. What are you laughing at? Can we get an usher? But it's because I just think, no, I get it. But you were also right saying I changed the energy on how I was looking at it. Because, like, I don't know that anorexia is the issue it was back in the day. It may still be. But I remember there was a time. It was huge. And, you know, with these anorectic girls, you could tell them how skinny they were, and it didn't, if anything, it made them worse because they saw themselves a certain way, and there's nothing you could say to make them see any different. I mean, you know, you looked at, I have no issue with people who have plastic surgery or whatever, but you look at a superstar like Michael Jackson, who clearly just couldn't stop. You know, with the, and you know, there was a, I understood the look he was trying to go for. And I remember there was a time where I'm like, oh, that's good. Leave it right there, Mike. You're good. If you wanted to do something with your nose or whatever, that's fine. I get it, but stop. And then you start seeing these pictures. You're like, oh, bud, you know, what's not right in you that you can't look in the mirror and ever be happy? And if that's why, if you don't get this right, you can't lose enough weight. There's not enough plastic surgery. There's always going to be something somewhere where you're going to still find fault. And at some point, you have to love who you are right now. Even to say, yeah, I'm going to lose some weight. I need to lose some weight. Fine. But in the meantime, I'm going to love who I am right now. And once you've gotten to a place and somebody says you look good, then say, thank you. And look, I'm not saying don't do your best. We all want to. Believe me, we all want to look our best. So don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I applaud. A lot of you have worked hard in here, and I applaud you for it. As much for your health as for anything else. And I ain't going to be mad at you if you don't do something. But I also, you know, you got to at some point look at it and go, it is good. God looked back in his creation and said, it is good. This morning when I looked at my, you know, you put up a Christmas tree at night and sometimes the morning light doesn't look as good as you thought. And this morning I was like, oh, even better. It is good. Hello, little Fox Theater ornament that they said. That's not an ornament to me. That's a reminder of when some says no, you say yes. And you pull their no into your yes. If it's worth it to you. I mean, you have to choose your battles. There's some things you're like, oh, this isn't worth it. That mattered to me. It was worth it. So, thoughts are things. Let me wrap up with these last quotes. Oh, here's in the Phillips. I forgot to show you the J.B. Phillips translation. It says, don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold. He was a British guy that lived in the early 20th century, so he spelled mold that way. But let God remold your mind from within. In other words, not external thoughts imposed on you, but who you really believe you are, so that you may prove in practice that the plan of God for you is good, meets all his demands, and moves toward the goal of true maturity. Let me show you these quotes, and then I'll let you out of here. I like this quote. It says, people who refer to out of the box see the box. People who don't know the box even exists are the innovative thinkers. I mean, you saw it, for whatever you think about our current president, not the president-elect, but our current president. Clearly, Barack Obama, it did not occur to him he couldn't be president. I think a lot of things that people of color have had to work through, he escaped because he wasn't, his dad was an African and his mother was a white liberal woman. He just had a very different, there's things he didn't have to work through. May I say that? Do you understand what I'm talking about? It just never occurred to him. And I think it ticked a lot of white people off. Because can I just get real here for a minute? Even back in the days when they used to call black people uppity or whatever, there's a thing that, it's a mindset that's still being dealt with. Like, I don't hate you, I'm not going to call you the N-word, but you need to stay in your place. There's a thought that pushes women into a corner or minorities into a corner to say, you can sit here next to me, but don't get any big ideas. Like, don't think you could be president and have your family eat off the White House china for 8 years. And for whatever you think about his presidency, it has reshaped reality. Anytime somebody does something that's never been done before, then you're like, oh, well, then I guess that's not impossible. Did I just get too real? Y'all know what I'm talking about. And I love this because it says, don't let those thoughts be imposed from without. Know who you are from within. Then this one is a really good one. I've used her before in quotes. I think the reward for conformity is that everyone likes you except yourself. That one's nearly a mantra for me. Because everybody wants to be liked. There's no that anybody says they don't, that's a lie. And I was thinking about even this week when Kim passed, it brought up a lot of stuff from years back. And I was thinking about, there was a time when I probably talked to him every day on the phone. Talked to Mark Sharona every day on the phone. I mean, a lot of these guys I was friends with who were on, this is back when TBN was in its heyday, and they were just on all the time. And I remember one day I was watching TBN, and I thought, why don't these guys ever help me out? I mean, why don't they come to my church and talk about how fabulous my church is, and they go on TBN and never mention it. And the voice inside me said, is that what you want? You want to be on TBN? And I was like, well, don't I? I mean, isn't that what I was supposed to want? And it's like I'm having the talk with the voice. The voice is like, yeah, you can do it. Now you're going to have to do telethon and raise money. And I'm like, ew, no, I don't want to do that. And I realize, like, all right, fine. If there are certain compromises I'm not willing to make to be that guy, as much as there's parts of me that would like to be that guy, but I'm not willing because I gotta go home at night and go, I like you so much. Not, and I'm not saying these other guys sold out. I'm just, that's their journey. I'm saying for me, I can't preach things that I really don't believe, obviously. I can't get on TV and say, God told me to take in 17 partners because God did not tell me that. And I don't think God told him that. And I'm not ever going to say stuff like that. I'm just not. I'm not a fundraiser. It's crazy because I will always have money, but I'm not a fundraiser. People ask me, how do you do it? I don't know. I prosper and am in health as my soul prospers. It's like what we're talking about, dieting. It's like it's a change. It really is. I know it's cliche, but it really is a prosperous mentality that causes you to prosper. A couple of times in conversations, even when we were doing planning the thing for Colin Wall. I said, well, I don't know if I want to spend that for that, whatever. And Avery said to me, she says, we are those people. We're those people that do this kind of thing. I said, you know what? Yes, we are. You're right. We are. We're the people that have, thank you for reminding me. And it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't my poverty mentality. It was, I don't want to, you know, I want to make it affordable for everybody. Because if it's me, I'm like, what time do we go? I might check my balance, make sure I can use that card, but I don't mind. Do I swipe or insert? Would you? And then finally, this one, probably my favorite quote of the day. In the spiritual life, every person is his or her own discoverer. And you need not grieve if your discoveries are not believed in by others. It is your business to push on, find more, and increase individual happiness. That is nearly a transformative quote. Because what it's saying is, as much as you would like to be liked, if I have to think a way for you to like me, then I don't want you to like me that much. Every relationship involves some compromise, no doubt. But when you get to the point that you can't even be yourself anymore, you can't even express your thoughts because of somebody else's thoughts, you know, like winning the battle, you gotta get out. There has to be at least an exchange of ideas, at least negotiation for compromise. So if you don't remember anything else I've said this month, and I actually believe you'll remember a lot of it, remember that thoughts are things. And when you're, let me just say this, I'm going to close. When you're having a negative thought, I know what it's like to say, oh, I cast out imaginations and every high thing that exalts. That's fine. Believe me, I can quote 2 Corinthians 3 to you. Though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God of the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Believe me, I know that. But let me tell you something. Just saying that verse of Scripture doesn't necessarily change stuff. Sometimes it's something just as simple as changing your scenery. Like if I can tell if I'm, even yesterday when I took Christine out to see Dr. Sheila, I texted her, I said, can you get in the car? Can you? Because she couldn't even walk down the stairs. And she said, yeah, she's got her head in the right place. And she told me, she says, I needed to get up and get dressed. Oh, and you know what else she told me? This was a trip. I've got to shut up. Is the movie starting? We got in the car and she said, let me tell you something that I just realized. She said, for years, she says, Dad, I don't know if you know this, but you have what you say. I said, yes, I've heard. She said, for years, when I would be stressed out with the girls, I would say, man, I just wish I had 3 days of being on painkillers, being in the bed, and not have to worry about anything. She said, I thought, as I'm laying there on painkillers, I thought, well, you've said it for years. And she said, I couldn't even, she said, no, I've joked about it for years. I just wish I had three days of painkillers and watching reality TV. And she said, I've had 3 days. I said, man, preaching to the choir, girlfriend. Because anytime I'm in the middle of something I don't like, there will nearly always be this gentle reminder, like, remember that time you said that? Well, it's manifested now. So that's why I say, Sunday's going to be great. We're going to have a great service today. And guess what happens? We end up having a great service. So thoughts are things. And if the thoughts are going in a negative direction, what she said to me is, I needed to get out of the house. Even if I was in pain, I can't look at those four walls again. And I said, well, you're right. I'm always a big one for pushing myself. Do you know what I mean? There's some of you, I know some of the situations that some of you sitting right here have been through lately. My own compassion would say, oh, you know what, just stay at home, stay in bed. But you know what? I know it's going to be better for you to get up, get dressed, get in the car. Even if you don't feel 100% yet, you're going to feel worse if you just keep laying in it. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes you have to change your view to change your thoughts. And maybe something as simple as go for a walk or get in the car. But something, like I know for me, if I'm laying in bed and I keep having a, just like if I'm worried about something, I actually will get up. Like I've got to get up and move, or I'll turn on the TV. I'll do something to break that frequency. And once I've broken that, then I'm fine and go back to sleep. But just laying there saying, I take authority over this in Jesus' name, only makes it more like what you resist persists. I've got to shut up. Let's all stand. Did you get anything out of this today? Yes. Yes, you did. Thoughts are things. You know what? I've kept you so late. Let's don't even run the, you know what to do. You know what? Give online. If you've got a check, Danny will be back there to receive it. Thank you for, if you just make it JESM. If you have cash, pay it forward. You can go ahead and start your pay it forward week. You're going to have an awesome week. Doc, just speak a word to everybody and let them, I want them to hear the vibration of your voice. You don't have to pray any big prayer. Just say something. Everybody welcome Dr. Ralph Martin.
Thank you, friend. Amen. Wow, this is awesome today, wasn't it?
Yes.
We're going to take this into this week. And what kind of week is this going to be?
Awesome.
That's exactly what it's going to be, what you said it's going to be. Amen. That's the kind of week you're going to have. Amen. Well, hug everybody's neck at least three times. Let them know you're glad to see them. Amen. God bless your heart. Amen.